Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm really excited to be moderating today's webinar on how to navigate the risks and costs of new technology, which is being brought to you by TCN. This is an exciting time to be in the credit collection industry. The development of new technology is being launched at an unprecedented pace, but it can be difficult to completely understand how all the different systems and products interact with one another. In this webinar, sponsored by TCN, we've got a panel of leading experts from across the credit collection industry who are here to share their thoughts and perspectives into how companies can maximize the impact of that new technology on their recovery and right party contact rates without making spending or compliance related mistakes. Sorry, as I get tied up on my own words. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Brian Albertson is the Chief Information Officer at Harris & Harris, where he heads the IT organization and has responsibility over day-to-day IT operations, as well as data security. He possesses more than 17 years of IT experience, much of that focused on the accounts receivable management space, working for some of the largest companies in the industry, in addition to being data security and IT consultant. Brian focuses on process automation, as well as making sure his organization is building technology solutions to increase efficiencies while reducing risk and overall cost, which is exactly what we're here to talk about today. Matt Kiefer is the Chief Officer for Information Development and Compliance for the Preferred Group of Tampa. He is a president, sorry, as I update my his bio on the go, in the Florida Collectors Association. He served on the board of the National Healthcare Collections Association, was a member of HFMA and MGMA, and is also an ACA scholar and fellow. He has been in the healthcare and collections since 2001. Jeremy Mapes is the founder and president of Mapes Consulting, which is one of the very few vendors previously endorsed by ACA International as a preferred vendor and senior executive to Agent Z LLC. Jeremy has 24 years in the ARM industry and has successfully headed operations and technology for companies from large to small, and has consulted to and supported well over 100 collection agencies and creditors on technology, automation, telephony, operations, and information security management, as well as consulting directly to multiple receivable software vendors. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we will get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everybody to reserve a minute and fill out the feedback survey that should pop up on your screen today after the webinar is over. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey if you want to wait for that instead. Your participation and your insight helps me develop content that is what you're looking for, and make sure the speakers are the people you want to hear from, which I can definitely say is the case we have with us today. With that, let's launch into our discussion. You know, as we've mentioned, or as I've mentioned, because I'm the only one who's talked so far, the amount of new technology available to collection operations is exploding. How do you recommend approaching the decision-making process for making a new technology investment? And Jeremy, since you're on my screen, we'll give you the honor of answering first.
Well, thanks, Mike, and I'm glad to be here and talk to everybody. When it comes to determining new technology, and I find that biggest thing for agencies is when you have two kinds of technology that you're always dealing with, the one that you didn't want because it's just a new cost, and the one that may actually do something for you. So when we talk about necessarily didn't want, we're usually talking about there's new compliance out there, there's new rules, everybody else is doing it, but it may not increase the bottom line. That's always the sunk cost technologies that come up. And then there's the technologies that actually lead to improved revenue lines, improved business, whether it be through automation or it be through taking something off the plate. Actually, it'd be all in the form of automation, but it would be automating some type of mechanism so that either the staff's not doing it or it's auditing without having to take up more people's time. For instance, you might have, you know, people that are familiar with call miner or one of those type of subjects. And I apologize if anybody hears some barking in the background, but call miner, for example, is a technology that could be for auditing, but doesn't necessarily increase your bottom line other than to, it does improve your staff, and with less lawsuits would increase bottom line. So it's all a matter of, you know, what that technology leads to. So I always put a pen and paper to technology to determine what is the value of the technology I'm bringing on. Do I have to do it, or is it something that I actually am expecting a bottom line from, and how can I answer that bottom line? What is the draw to that? Because there's always new companies out there saying that they're going to increase your bottom line by X percent, but sometimes the way they measure that may be different than the true bottom line is. They may tell you that they're going to increase your number of contacts, or that they may increase your number of calls, but does that always result in more payments or more information, or is the new technology a new way to reach the consumer? And then you have to also balance legal exposure with that to determine if it's going to expose you more to the mainstream that might give you feedback in the form of lawsuits, because it's something new and it just came up on the attorney's plate and they thought it's something that they could take a whack at. So it's always kind of a trifecta there. You're looking at savings, you're looking at compliance, and you're looking at exposure. And that's kind of where I start with things when I'm looking at new technology.
This is Matt. I'll add to what Jeremy says. You know, I always look at things from a compliance perspective. So I'm looking at any applicable laws or even guidance from the CFPB and or other, you know, any regulatory bodies, especially in your jurisdiction, that may pose more risk than reward, especially if it's going to involve something that hasn't been tried yet. Like, you know, think about when ringless voicemail technology came, it was first introduced many years ago. A lot of people were hesitant to use it. But aside from communications technology, there were concerns when people first started scoring and scrubbing accounts, you know, hitting the credit bureau. They were, you know, there were questions on, you know, is that really a permissible purpose to do things like that? Or if you're a debt buyer and you're buying debt, you know, and you're scoring accounts, perhaps you don't want to letter all the accounts. You're going to just maybe do the top 60 or 70% of those accounts. Well, if you're going to letter on contact only to lower your postage costs, if there is a communication, somebody calls in or something like that, do you have a way to make sure that you're getting, you know, that validation notice out if you're lettering on contact only? And is there some kind of audit mechanism, something in place to catch that, to make sure you are meeting your requirements within the 5 days? You know, basically, I just think you need to weigh the pros and cons of that technology and the risk versus the rewards, and then look at the geographic locations and the case law and rulings, just to add to what Jeremy said.
And this is Brian. I'll kind of add on a little bit to what Matt and Jeremy have already said. I think I look at it in a similar way, but maybe in some ways a little bit different. I think, you know, from my perspective, I think you have to look at what your technology environment or ecosystem or whatever you want to call it looks like, determine, you know, maybe what gaps you have in that technology. So, you know, are you currently using a technology that can text, or do you want to get into a technology where you could chat or multi-channel? I think first come in terms of looking at your needs is, what do you want to be able to try and do? What do you have the people in terms of staffing to maybe accomplish that objective, and what's important to you based on maybe even the market verticals that you plan? And then, you know, looking at what type of budget you have for the initiative, and then, you know, what the level of sponsorship looks like in the company. Is it something that, you know, organizationally you have the full support of the organization to do? It's a must have. There's no way you can finish the year without it. Or is it a nice to have? We'd like to try it. And, you know, who's going to help run that initiative to try to get it done? But Matt's also right. Whatever you look to implement, there's always a compliance and or data security component of that you have to make sure that you're not violating or causing other potential risks by implementing or using that technology.
as you go through that review, Brian, which I think is a great step for agencies to take, I guess, and should there has to be some sort of prioritization, you know, because if there's like, let's say I identify two or three things or even more things that I want my system to be able to do that it can't do now, then I've got to sort of figure out which one, is it sort of an order of importance, which one's going to be the best at improving my RPC rate or be the best at improving my collection rate, or, you know, is it the one that's least expensive? You know, how, you know, what are some of the criteria that people may want to consider as they sort of maybe prioritize what's on their wish list?
Sure. I think the reality is we're all in the same boat. You know, we only have so much time. We only have so many resources, and we only have so much money to do some projects or implement new solutions. So I think part of it is, I mean, do you have a good view at what maybe technology gaps you have or what you want to work on in combination with maybe other strategic initiatives that you need to complete as a company? And yeah, there should be some level of prioritization, not just at the IT level, like here's my resource pool and here's the skill sets that I have and here's who can work on these types of projects, but just functionally for the organization, you know, what are the key initiatives that need to get done? What have people come up with that involve a technology that may, you know, increase collections, provide some other level of efficiency? And what's the order of prioritization? And at some point when you start building that list, you know, you should be able to preliminarily budget maybe what something's going to cost in combination with how long it's going to take and how complex it is. And based on multiple factors, make a decision on here's my rank in terms of what projects need to get done and the order that they have to get done. And that might be a way to kind of walk through or eliminate things to determine what you really should focus on. And then back to what I mentioned a few minutes ago, making sure that there's some level of executive buy-in to get the project done, because at some point you're going to run into a roadblock. You really need that executive level sponsorship to help move things along, whether it's a resource constraint, a budget constraint, or something else.
Okay, excellent, thank you. You know, we've mentioned briefly direct drop voicemails and technology like that, and text messages are definitely becoming more popular, but, you know, many agencies are afraid to make that investment because of concerns about compliance risks or being sued. You know, I guess along with sort of this notion of prioritization, how do you manage that debate to reach an objective conclusion? You know, when you're looking at something that maybe someone might think is a compliance risk, how do you manage that debate to sort of come to the best decision for an office, Matt?
Well, until the final rule comes out from the CFPB or there's clear guidance from the FCC, for instance, when you're talking about SMS technology and things like auto dialers and stuff, I think the agency just has to weigh risk versus reward. But you also need to look at things like case law, because, you know, you could be an agency, you know, in the West, and this new technology is favorable to you. There's no case law or rulings in your area. Everything looks good, and you want to kick it off. But you're in Florida, and then all of a sudden you got this adverse decision that goes against what you're trying to implement. And while you may be safe in the West, you know, this Florida decision, and you're a Florida agency owner, you know, you got to weigh that against implementing that technology, even if it's going to give you some quick hits because of adverse rulings. You know, we've had some recent bad rulings in the Middle District of Florida and in the Southern District, and you know, it may cause an agency that had already implemented something to put a pause on that technology.
This is Jeremy. And along with that, I agree with Matt. It's a good point. Sometimes it's not that you're right or wrong. You can be right and still be wrong just because in that area you're in, the case law goes against you, or it was poorly defended at the time and the ground's weak for you to be able to utilize that. And a lot of times I talk with customers on different ways to improve their operations. I'll give a simple example. This technology has been around for a long time. So with your medium to small size companies that are sending out hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of letters, you have situations where you have mail returns. Some people are using electronic mail return through their vendor. Some people are still opening the letters and getting the account number and putting it through system to count the return mail so that way the system acknowledges it. Some people are using barcode scanners, and there was a case with barcode scanners that came up that if the barcode was on the outside of the letter, there was one bad case where they said, well, even though it's a barcode and the person can't read it, it's still an account number, so it's personal information, so it went against the agency in that case. But sometimes there's simple fixes too if we look at that, such as encrypting the code. So one solution that some of the agencies were using was, okay, so the account number viewing through the envelope or on the outside by itself might not be legitimate to do based on some of the court cases that came out, but using a encoded number that does not translate into the account number, translates into nothing. The only thing that can pick it up is the system to be able to translate it, made that possible for them to use that technology. So there's a lot of investigation that goes on to it. And just like Matt said, you know, by region, by area, you have to find out what the case law looks like. Is there ways to overcome that? It's not always a black and white scenario. And if there is, what's the risk of that it may expose to lawsuits that even if you're, again, right, that it still just may give you, you know, if you've got attorneys looking for barcodes in general, which I haven't found that to be the case that I know of, but if they are looking for barcodes, then maybe it's not good to do that for a bit just because they're going to assume any barcodes an account number. So you're always weighing that risk.
And this is Brian. I'll just jump in here. I think everything that's been said is right. I mean, you can't make this type of decision without some sort of legal counsel guidance, whether that's internal counsel or external. The other thing that, you know, I think I would also mention is, you know, some companies, depending on market vertical, may have a different risk tolerance. I mean, I know with a lot of medical collections, there's a lot of implied consent to do things. I mean, different legal opinions, of course, but I think you also have to look at what your ecosystem is from a client's perspective and make some decisions on, you know, if you do want to test the technology, you know, weighing that risk, you know, again, that risk versus reward, what makes the most sense and where should you try it to make sure that it's a technology that can help you and help increase contact rate, collections, et cetera, in combination with what your risk tolerance is.
Mike, this is Matt. Let me add on one little piece because this is recent. And it sounds trivial, but it was really problematic for us because there was no case law. And this is specifically the absence of case law. We had an attorney in the middle district for the plaintiff that tried to make the allegation that by using a letter vendor, we were making a third party disclosure and violating FDCPA. Now we had, you know, great counsel and a great attorney that worked on this case, but the absence of case law, it was like, are you kidding me? You know, everybody uses third-party vendors. Think about the implications had we lost that and that had gone through. That affect every agency out there, at least the ones who outsource to a letter vendor. But not just that. Think about, could that same scenario be made for sending data to your dialer vendor? Or send, you know, luckily, we won this on summary judgment. It was such a frivolous and BS case. But, you know, things like that are so frivolous and just out there with these attorneys making up, creating things because the FDCPA hasn't been updated in so long. You know, they just make up these allegations and get very creative. And yet you still, as an agency, have to pay to defend it.
Brian, you mentioned client input, which I think is a great segue to another question I had. What about when it comes the other way, where you've got clients sort of pushing or requesting, or, you know, sort of in air quotes, demanding technology that maybe you're not comfortable using, or sort of how do you manage that dynamic of the relationship?
That's a good question. It's not always one that a technology person answers, but I think part of it comes down to, you know, the relationship with the client, how impactful they are to your business. Back to some of the things that we talked about at the beginning, what's the perceived risk based on the type of business that, you know, or vertical that they're in that you're providing that service to them for, that you make kind of a decision that, you know, in some cases, and we run into it too, where maybe we make a decision to test a new technology based on an ask that really is a good ask. It's just we haven't moved forward with making that decision. I think you still go back to what we talked about in the first question, which is, when you're implementing that new technology, what are all the variables you need to consider? So what are the available vendors and options that could perform that service or solution? Take texting as an example. You know, how are the different ways that you can integrate it? I mean, very few solutions out there, you know, depending on your collection system or just plug and play, you have to develop some sort of interface or way to get the data to the solution that you're going to use as a contact method. You know, what budget and what staff do you have to do it? But the majority of the time, to directly answer your question, it's usually not an IT person answering that question. It's usually a business relationship discussion and can we do it and how do we do it and what's the timeline to do it to make the client happy if it's something that's really important.
And I think too, sometimes it's about educating your client. For instance, if you review their guarantor agreements or their contracts, you know, do they have language in there that specifically allows you consent, for instance, to text or email or call a cell phone? And maybe sometimes it's suggestions or encouraging them to get with counsel to modify their agreements, contracts, and stuff to explain why you can or cannot do something or how it would help you do your job, you know, kind of the help me help you philosophy.
And to add, this is Jeremy, to add to that, especially in the medical industry that I deal with quite a bit, you know, we always see they're not usually coming to you to say, we want you to implement this new technology. They're usually pushing against technology because they're worried that they're going to get sued, they being the creditors or the hospitals or the medical facilities, over something new that's coming out. And so a lot of times it's a point of partnering with your clients or actually coming to them as the expert if you're gathering the information and bringing it to them to say, hey, you know, we have an opportunity here that we, on our second notices or third notices, you know, give follow-up by text after we get consent. But if you get that consent when they enter the door, you know, when they're signing in and you get the consent to do texting right off the bat, you know, that can make a large difference in the venues that that's available so that you can implement that technology. And that's something that does have to go back to them and to their attorneys to approve. But if you don't have that type of partnership, it's very hard to put out new types of technology without them being in, without your clients or credit or the creditors being involved in it.
Okay, excellent. Well, at this point, I just want to pause the discussion briefly and talk a little bit about the sponsor for today's webinar, TCN. TCN is a leading provider of cloud-based call center technology for enterprises, contact centers, BPOs, and collection agencies worldwide. Founded in 1999, TCN combines a deep understanding of the needs of call center users with a highly affordable delivery model, ensuring immediate access to robust call center technologies such as predictive dialer, IVR, call recording, and business analytics required to optimize operations and adhere to TCPA regulation. Its always-on cloud-based delivery model provides customers with immediate access to the latest version of the TCN solution, as well as the ability to quickly and easily scale and adjust to evolving business needs. TCN serves various Fortune 500 companies and enterprises in multiple industries, including newspaper, collection, education, healthcare, automotive, political, customer service, and marketing. TCN is engaged and actively involved in understanding TCPA changes and how it is changing the industry. TCN regularly speaks to local and national leaders to help educate them on matters of TCPA and compliance for the betterment of the industry as a whole. For more information, please visit www.tcn.com. Thanks again to TCN for sponsoring today's webinar. I'm sure I speak for all of us listening when I say we appreciate your generous support. Now, let's get back to our discussion. You know, last year, a collection agency was the victim of one of the largest data breaches in the United States. But there still appears, at least from my perspective, to be some apathy when it comes to securing infrastructure and fighting against malware. So my very open-ended question to the panel is, how should those issues be addressed within a collection operation? And I'll leave anybody who wants to jump in first this time.
This is Matt. I'll start. I think, you know, it's really important for leadership to set the example and buy in. The old adage that it's not going to happen to me because I'm too small and I'm not that big of a target, you know, that just needs to be cast away. We're all targets, and it's only a matter of time before a lack of oversight or testing or ignorance catches up to you. I've been in compliance forums where tech companies found malicious software sitting for months lurking behind the scenes, monitoring and gathering information for their big hit or, you know, ransomware attack or something like that. And I guess how you see not just data breaches, but hospitals that come to a crippling halt or have to close altogether. Patients are diverted to other hospitals due to the EHR system being completely shut down. And that endangers the lives and, you know, it's putting people at risk. But it's not just hospitals. You know, healthcare centers and collection agencies, it also includes school districts and cities. I mean, there's been an ongoing cyber war with our adversaries, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, just think of the recent news events. The cyber war is the continuing war that's only going to get worse. And on the agency side, just think about what would happen if your operations were, you know, completely shut down for days. What crippling effect would that have? Or just for weeks in order to do a forensic analysis and a cleaning of your system. In my opinion, I just think it's better to pay now and be prepared than to pay later or risk complete failure. And in the example you gave, Mike, you know, the loss of business and clients and or bankruptcy.
This is Jeremy. I'd like to add to that. I've been doing the information security side for years as a VP of IT and everything else. I've run across this and working with some large medical centers over the years. I can tell you that even if you're doing everything right, you got to be able to prove you are. And that's why I think what Matt said is important, is that even if it wasn't you that breached, and I've had scenarios going back 15, 20 years ago where, and I hate to date myself, but going back 15, 20 years where there was a, not necessarily a breach, but a loss of information at centers. And the first thing they pointed to when they saw a loss of information was they point to all their vendors and go, it's got to be one of you guys. And so even though you're not at fault necessarily, you've got to be able to prove you're not the one at fault. And so therefore, how do you do that? Well, your audit logs, a third-party analysis or a third-party and adopting an information structure that's mainstream, that's always changing. So if you can pull out your audit records and show that people have come in and have checked those, you know, at least you can get yourself out of the way of the bullet when they're looking to see who did wrong. Because sometimes they can't figure it out, and they're going to look at the person that can't prove that they didn't cover themselves. You know, have you had break checks? And as far as what was Matt was saying, as far as, you know, foreign invaders, you know, they're getting more sophisticated every day. It used to be that you could lock out your international IP addresses to keep them out of your business, and because you could see them coming in from China or wherever. But now they're jumping off VPN tunnels where they could bounce and look like they're your next door neighbor, just the same as you see phone calls come in your area code from somebody in one of the foreign countries like India to market something that would actually an illegal phone call, but the feds can't chase them down because it's in a different country, and they'll continue to bombard you every other day anyway. So the big thing is to get the target off of you. The more you can prove, the more you can show that you've done the work, you know, not just do the work, but show that you're doing the work and show that that's been verified by a third party as far as technology to show that you've got all your doors closed and everything's covered goes a long ways to not only getting new customers and being able to market that, but being able to retain customers and not end up with your doors closed, because the end of that agency, I believe, was that their doors ended up closing due to the fact that, you know, they, you know, nobody wants to use them after that happens. And it could be, I've seen agencies give an example that they had all the external doors closed, and they actually, there's an agency in Indiana that had a breach where somebody came in and actually stole their server. You know, they never planned on that. So on the outside, they were hard-coded. On the inside, they were soft and chewy. Somebody broke in, took the server, and now they had to report to everybody that the server got stolen. So you just have to manage everything from your infrastructure technically to the way it's reinforced from the location it's at. If your data is with a third party like a cloud vendor, then you need to make sure that they have the proper certifications. Do they have an SAA 16? Do they have a ISO 27001? What's their instructions for if there is some type of failure of controls? What in disaster recovery comes into play? If they go down, do they bring you up at a different site? If you have a single site, how do you come up if you go down? So all those play into the longevity of your customers or your ability to stay in business. And if you're not worried about today, it will be tomorrow. But there's a lot of companies, like just like Mike said at the first, that seem like that it's a worry when it comes up, and then once that starts to die off, they don't worry anymore. Well, the fact is, when you spend the money, you should spend it for the good and continue every time to cycle your security and make sure that you're continuing to do those efforts, because it's much easier to maintain, much more cost efficient to maintain than having to do a reflex action every time and have to push money down the hole that you didn't expect because the next thing happened and you're running to chase, you know, chase whatever may, you know, might occur.
And this is Brian. I guess I have a few comments. I mean, to build on what was said, I mean, one, it's a fact. Nobody's 100% compliant. Even people that have good information security frameworks and processes in place, there's always something to improve upon. So, you know, one of the other things I would mention is, and it'd be interesting to get an idea of what others are running into, not just on the panel, but those attending the webinar, but, you know, how many people here in their company have dedicated information security staff that their only focus is on some level of compliance or monitoring or management of key systems, data security alerts, et cetera. I think the other thing to take a look at, and we do it a lot ourselves, we play in a few different market verticals. Those market verticals drive compliance with really a bit different data security types of standards, whether it's something on the government side, which is usually NIST-based compliance, a lot of healthcare, so that's, you know, HIPAA, high tech, depending on who you run into, you know, every one of us is taking credit cards for payments, so that's PCI, DSS compliance. You know, I think it's important, and Jeremy alluded to it a minute ago, but, you know, they're really, every company should have some level of budget allocated to data security, whether that's buying or enhancing your, you know, firewalls, your intrusion prevention, your alerting and monitoring systems, so where you log your security events, or maybe it's even bringing in those third parties. You know, I think there's probably a lot of people and those that I've seen in the industry, industry-wide, excuse me, that tend to think that like a self-assessment is appropriate when evaluating the risk. But most of the people that perform that self-assessment are an individual on like an IT team that may not have the expertise, or they're the one-man band. They're the only show in town as it relates to monitoring or managing the infrastructure. And it's really not an independent view at what the risks are and if you're truly compliant with some of the controls that you should be.
And just the Jeremy, one more time, just to add to that, the having a third party audit or somebody that does some type of gap analysis is a big deal, because it also improves your internal staff if you're using internal staff for that, or even if you're using if you're small enough that you have to outsource it to a local vendor. The best test for them and the best way to increase their knowledge is to have a separate independent person or group do that process, because I can tell you different people are going to find different things. It doesn't matter if they all have the same certifications, they find different things. There hasn't been any place I haven't walked into that, and a lot of times when I'm not even doing information security work, I'll just happen to notice, oh, you've got these great locks on everything, and yes, you've got all the paperwork in place, and the tunnel to get me in was secure, and that's great. But once I got in and you thought that I could only go to a workstation, guess what? I can actually tag all your servers, because you basically, you know, brought down every, you know, allowed me to get to everything, even though you think I'm connecting to this workstation. You have no way to detect me moving around. So there's always something. But the big one of the big parts to that is, and if we take the High Tech Act, for example, that may not be familiar with, but after HIPAA came out several years later, they actually gave HIPAA teeth. HIPAA didn't have teeth at the beginning. They brought in the High Tech Act and said, if you had a breach, here's what the cost is going to be. And the cost changes based upon what you've done. If you've actually brought in auditors and it wasn't misuse or lack of doing what you're supposed to. Let's say you didn't get any security, you left your firewall open, and you didn't have anybody check it. There's a price for that, and it could even result in jail time. But if you actually did the steps and you had somebody check the security, and the auditors came through, and maybe it's just a new hole that popped up that everybody ended up with, and there's no way to stop it because nobody knew about it before, there's a different price to pay for that from the federal level if you have a breach. So the more you can prove that you're doing the things and bring in people to show that you're doing the right things, the less you might end up paying. And of course, the better the media is going to be on it that you were doing the right things. It's just something that wasn't, that couldn't be helped, as opposed to you were just out there willy-nilly and not taking any security precautions.
You know, I think we totally glossed over the most important thing you said, Jeremy, and that's a collection agency that's soft and chewy.
Not to mention the media loves collection agencies, don't they?
Oh, yes.
I'm curious to get a sense from each of you, and a reminder to everybody, if you have a question for our panel, type it into the Q&A. Hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel and send it to us, and we'll be sure to get to it before the end of the conversation. You know, as we head into a new year, I'm curious, a lot of companies may have earmarked investments or some of their budget in 2020 for technology. Should there be a timing component to this? I mean, is everybody out there now looking at, you know, new systems and new products and new bells and whistles, or do you wait till after tax time and do it? You know, let's say you do sort of make the decision to make an investment. How do you sort of figure out the timing of it?
This is Brian. I guess I'll jump in first. You know, I think industry-wide, there's always been, in any agency, especially the larger the agency, the more apprehension there is to making major changes during a tax season. But from my perspective, I think it still comes down to what that particular technology is and what perceived benefit it has. In most cases, unless there's a high success rate or thought process that whatever you're implementing is going to succeed right away, I mean, you tend to implement products or solutions in phases. You know, get a solution in place, let's test it out with one of our clients, maybe it's an A-B split on the accounts, and validate, you know, the new technology against maybe what you're currently doing or what your existing business process is. But I think, you know, depending on how mature the organization is, part of that view at implementing that technology may rely, if it's, you know, revenue driven, to what you expect that impact to be and what you expect that impact to be throughout the year. So, you know, if you take the tax season into account, I mean, that's generally your best opportunity throughout the year. That's when you see the highest collections and return. So maybe it is beneficial to try to put something in place. So that kind of decision really drives the when you do something. Maybe it's, you know, fourth quarter to be ready for a tax season, or you know, whatever it is you're doing, there's different ways to evaluate how and when you choose to implement.
This is Matt. I agree with Brian. I think it depends on the technology, the area of the focus, the laws that, you know, regarding that technology. Is it a quick hit, like implementing an IVR where your exposure is, you know, very little, or is it going to be a 6-month project that's going to consume all your IT resources? And you don't want to, you know, do it in the middle of tax season, which is typically, you know, one of the best seasons of the year. So, again, I think it's a combination of the reason for the technology, the risk versus reward, the law, and how long it's going to take out of the time and resources and materials from your team.
Right. And this is Jeremy. To go along with that, I usually see the purchase, you know, you have three stages. Buy-in, that you want the technology, the purchase cycle, you know, you may be waiting till the next year to budget it in, and the bigger the agency, usually the more that's adhered to as far as what budget that's going to hit. And just because it gets purchased month one of 2020, the implementation cycle may be separate from that, because the budget comes up, they can get it in the budget. But like Matt and I think Brian was saying too, was tax season. A lot of people don't want to implement new technology unless it has a low impact on the environment until after the tax season. I know there's some people I know out there that they're looking at different payment vendors, and they may hold back on payment vendor or new technology because they don't want it as much as it might have helped tax season, they don't want it to interrupt either. They don't want to go down where they can't, you know, take payments. That'd be horrible during tax season. So they'll buffer that back. Whereas it might be a new type of letter going out or a new contact that wouldn't interrupt current activities and was low resources, then we might be able to test that out during the tax season and not have to wait past that cycle.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Matt, you mentioned this a little while ago, and we'd be remiss to have a conversation these days without talking about the proposed rule. So I'm curious how the release of the proposed debt collection rule and the pending release of a final debt collection rule from the CFPB, which we're expecting possibly at some point in 2020, how has that affected the adoption and usage of new technology tools in the credit collection industry? Do you think everyone's just sort of hanging back, waiting for that final rule before making any big investments, or is that not necessarily the case?
I think it varies from agency to agency, and depending on what location in the country you're in and your risk tolerance. There's some cases where we're waiting for some final rule before we move forward, and then there's other cases like SMS technology where, you know, right now we're kind of having the patient be proactive and they're texting us to get our payment portal link and things like that. So I think it's a combination of your risk tolerance as well as the waiting for clarity from the FCC and CFPB. But I think we're going to get it now sooner rather than later, based on recent events in the last couple of months and Trump signing the TRACE Act and stuff. So hopefully ACA has helped a lot in that area, and hopefully we can keep that momentum before a possible change in administration.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Are there overarching areas that collection agencies should be seeking to address with technology investments? You know, just to name a few to kind of get the conversation going: collector productivity, automation, compliance, risk management, contact rates. Is there, again, I guess maybe the answer is sort of it depends, but maybe we could spend a few minutes sort of talking about maybe what some of the decision-making criteria should be, you know, when looking at these different areas and where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. Jeremy, do you mind starting us off?
Sure. So that question is ever changing and is not necessarily industry wide, but I find different agencies hit at different times. There's new technology out there, but then there's agencies are always at different levels. So I run into agencies all the time, and they're growing up. So that they were 5 collectors yesterday. There are 15 collectors now. They may be 50 collectors in the next year. And depending on the market they're in for one, because each one's different. If you're in the credit card auto loan market, you're probably dealing with people like Citibank and JP Morgan and people like that. And they're going to dictate newer technology, such as they may want daily updates of data. And automation comes into play more at that point, because you need, you know, to have somebody sit there and send files back and forth every day and to audit those, you know, that can be automated through automation software so that it can bring the errors to the top and you don't have people sitting there and doing it. That's what they'd be concerned about. Then obviously compliance is always changing with the government. So we just kind of, I have a lot of companies, it's good if you just figure out what the average is over the last five or 10 years of what your annual average is for having to pay for different security pieces, and then add on to that to figure out, you know, maybe bulk in an extra 20% of what that expense is going to be for whatever new requirement you may have, and if you're not doing something right now. But I find a lot of it deals around automation, depending on as people grow up. Another example were people with government contracts. A lot of them were having with their different systems. It wasn't even a matter of what collection system you're on, but for a point with some of the federal contracts, the images were coming over in PDF or in some type of optical format, and creating automation technology so they could extract the data necessary to bring it into their system without, I remember one large agency reduced 300 staff by automating that data into an OCR software that could just grind through it and take it in. The same with your data analysis on phone calls. And, you know, you have all those different software out there today that can analyze phone calls and improve upon that. And so how much you want to bulk into that. So it's always the life cycle of the agency, where they feel like the low hanging fruit is for the next thing. And usually automation is a big part of it, being able to automate functions that they're now doing manually today. And then the other part is, you know, security is always forced in. I say forced in because, you know, even though it should be something that the companies accept, usually the environment dictates how you progress with your security and the new ways that you have to connect with different different clients and vendors, and that you have that investments kind of built in. And that's where I see a lot of people spending their money. How can we automate things better, or how can we increase our revenue? So the two big pieces, automation and then new ways to connect to consumers, since phone calls are ever getting harder to make contact with people with all the technology that's running against us. When phone calls come through and they identify that it's not somebody they know and they don't want to pick it up, that you can actually reach somebody and talk to them in some manner, whether it be by phone, by mail, by text message, or whatever it might be that allows you to get to them so that you can get some payments in.
This is Matt. I'll just add, you know, like Jeremy said, monitoring and investing in communication technology that's going to match consumer preferences. But also, we talked about this, I think, at length now, but preventing against phishing and ransomware attacks and continuing testing of your vulnerabilities. But also, you know, reviewing and periodically re-reviewing your policies and procedures and work instructions to take account changes that have occurred over time through the use and implementation of your technology in your processes. But also, there's things like reviewing your compensation plan for your collectors. Could an argument be made from a plaintiff's counsel that there's unlimited potential to abuse the law due to the way they're incentivized and in a lack of any controls or audits to mitigate that risk? Things like, as far as right party contacts, do you have controls in place to limit call frequency after a right party contact? Are disputes and claims of identity theft, bankruptcies, you know, attorney accounts, are they being handled properly and controls in place to limit your exposure on those? More importantly, do your clients have, using different systems, what if they can't properly identify or notify you that an attorney represents a consumer or that a bankruptcy was filed and they slip you that account? For instance, do you do a bankruptcy scrub up front for your first notice and first communications? I'm sure most agencies are going to say, yeah, but that's great. But what if a bankruptcy slipped through after that fact and it's a year or 2 years later and now it's a tax season campaign? And you want to initiate a calling campaign or a letter campaign to take advantage of tax season, are you scrubbing beforehand on those older accounts to have data services set up on your letter, you know, just in case there is a bankruptcy that slipped through the cracks? And how do you correct clients that keep sending you, you know, basically mistakes, things that slip through the cracks due to their processes or lack or ability to identify an account? Those are the things I think you also need to take in consideration and make sure that either through audit or control or technology that you're catching that, more importantly, passing that information on to your client. And, you know, finally, if you're a debt buyer and you have to service a ton of old accounts and you can't afford to letter all of them, are you using scoring technology to identify the better accounts to collect so you don't have to bust the bank on postage? Just things like that.
And actually, Matt, I appreciate. Oh, go ahead, Brian. Go ahead.
Well, I know we're running a little short on time, but the only thing I wanted to add to that is, and I didn't hear Jeremy or Matt say it, is, you know, at least for us, and I'm sure for others, analytics is really driving some key decision making. So if you're looking at investments or what you might consider implementing, those analytics play, you know, many different roles, whether that's some sort of reporting role or analysis role, or even with what Matt just said with regard to scoring. I mean, there's some solutions that are out there, and I know AI is the buzzword, but there are solutions out there that provide maybe opportunities to look at your inventory in a different way, maybe even help focus you on what channel of communication you should consider using to connect to somebody.
And I was just going to add to that and kind of add on to what Matt said. It, you know, it's funny out there. We talk about bankruptcy and deceased scrubs, and actually I'd throw into that voice recording. I've talked to agencies in the last 6 months that were still trying to decide whether doing bankruptcy and deceased checks at the front was worth the value of doing it. And, you know, me looking at them going, really? You know, I had that discussion 15 years ago, and it was a great idea back then. It's even a better idea now. Voice recording, you know, people, is it going to get us in trouble? How's that going to improve us? Well, you know, your audit team reviewing it, being able to prove to your client and prove to, if a legal case came up, what was said, even if the person said the wrong thing, it proves that you're auditing and controlling what's going on and how you're working to improve and discourage anything happening in a bad manner. You know, there's things that we take for granted that we're used to because we've been around in this business so long that there's agencies out there that go, really? Voice recording is an important thing? Really? Bankruptcy decease is an important thing? So it's always good to talk, you know, in the industry to other people, and don't let yourself be siloed into just where you are and just an attorney that may not be part of the industry telling you that, you know, this is or is not important, because across the industry, it may be something that's just, you know, just a given thing now that that most people are doing, and you don't want to put yourself in jeopardy because you're not aware that that is a commonplace tool to use and what benefit that they get out of it, whether it be resistance to a legal action or the fact that they're not calling on accounts that we're never going to pay in the first place. You know, we started data mining with some agencies now so that if they've got accounts in the past that were, you know, bad accounts, that we can see those up front. We know that the person never pays their bill, or we know that this person happens to grab an attorney. And so we actually cycle our own database so that it alerts us the very first, instead of figuring out later on when it finally connects or may or may not connect that we're going to have the exact same problem with this individual and that they're a high risk or a low value account to go after.
You know, there's a popular saying that there's no such thing as spending too much on compliance these days. I'm curious, does the saying there, you know, is the saying there's no such thing as spending too much on technology? Is that something that may not, that might not be, that might be true these days as well? I'm curious to get your thoughts. Does anyone want to jump in first?
I would jump in first. This is Jeremy. I'd jump in first only for the fact that there's some misconceptions is that technology is always going to be expensive. There's a lot of things that can be done, whether it's simply securing FTP across the channel to clients or vendors, or exposing your SQL database to being able to mine it. You know, there's tools out there that are as simple as free. Now, free isn't always free. Free may mean you have to do more work. And so you really have to understand what the value of that and how much resources it's going to take to learn that new tool. But I think a lot of people always see it as more dollars spent. But if you can justify it and you can realize that maybe you don't have to go the most expensive route, then that can aid in being able to work forward, that it's not always going to be, you know, an amazing amount of money that you have to put into it. But you also have to also figure out what the cost is going to be in the effort too.
This is Matt. I'll add to that, you know, again, you got to measure your costs against your potential profitability. You're probably not going to be able to use your full arsenal if you got low balance, low contingency rate accounts, but you possibly can use more tools in your arsenal if you have higher balance, higher contingency rate accounts. You know, it's just like suing. You're not going to sue on every single account. You're going to look at assets. You're going to look at balance, age, all these different things. To make a point, like Brian said, sometimes doing that analytics behind the scene, or having a vendor that's going and looking, you know, does this person have assets? Is this going to meet our internal criteria to sue, or our internal criteria to use this vendor or this vendor for this kind of scrub, you know, these various processes? I think it's just a combination of the vertical that you're in, the, you know, the type of debt, whether it's medical debt, balance, age, all this kind of stuff. And I'll give you another example. You may have a hospital or a system that's using scoring and things like that, and that's great, but their affiliated medical groups are not as connected to the hospital. They're not on the same system. Maybe it's a lack of IT resources, and maybe they're not doing as well as the hospital in getting the updates and the information. So you may be actually able to use those tools for the physician side, but not necessarily the hospital side. Or why reinvent the wheel? If the hospital is scoring and scrubbing for insurance and things like that, you may be able to connect the dots, because now you're getting the hospital account, you're getting the physician account, and you can, you know, make the better assessment of the data and the collectability of the accounts, things like that. I think it's just working smart.
Good tip. We've got a couple of minutes left, actually, maybe just literally a couple. Last chance to get a question in. We do have one in the queue. I'm curious to get feedback from everybody. When you talk about risk, how do you make the conversation data-driven for those leaders that require data to make decisions? I
Matt, I think you have to use a combination of the data and then also educate, whether it's your client or leadership. You know, there's not always a direct connect between leadership and compliance. You know, that's why it's your duty to, and your obligation is to educate your upper leadership, because they may not be aware of recent changes in the law, recent court rulings. You know, they're focused on growing the agency, leading it, whatever. But the same applies to your clients too. I think you have to just stay connected and educate the clients, and I'll yield so that Brian and Jeremy can get in here.
And this is Brian. I mean, it depends on which risk kind of you're talking about, like legal compliance or data security. But when you're having that, you know, I'll talk data security, when you're talking about that data security type discussion, especially with senior leaders, that a lot of times is just over their head, and, you know, they're not really understanding the true risk. There's lots of different data sources out there. Even if you look at like published reports that are done annually, like Verizon does a good one. There's a few other vendors that do them, but, you know, you can use the data to tell a good story. So even statistically, if you have your own mechanisms in place for certain portions of your data security framework, whether that's things like vulnerability management, or even some of the event logging that you may have in place, you can always use that data to say, like, here's on a monthly average how many vulnerabilities we have. And today I'm the only person doing that work, and I'm manually doing these updates after everyone goes home from, you know, 10 p.m. to midnight, and there's 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 of these that are either high or critical or medium based risks in a given month. You know, here's a tool that can help automate this and do this work off hours and cover, you know, 80% of that to get, you know, the time back that we really need to focus on running the business. But there's a lot of statistics around data security, even in regard to the number of breaches, the cost of those breaches, and all of those things.
And with new technology, I think it's an important point, kind of from what Matt said as well. The executives of the company may not be as knowledgeable about collections. I've worked with companies where they're purchased out. The executive staff did not have a 10 years or even 2 years necessarily of collection experience, and they have no idea what the industry looks like. So I find that part of our job is to be able to present a case just like you're an attorney to the company, so that you can say, okay, we know these other companies use the same technology, and this is what it's done for them. This is the lift they show. If you're not presenting that type of information, you may not be able to, may not be able to sell it, because in some ways we're salesmen in technology. When we're looking for new technology outside of, security, you kind of go, here it is, you don't want to get sued. But when you're talking about new technology, where it's SMS or whatever it may be, you know, you've got to present that to management and say, here's what we expect to save. Here's how secure we think it is. And it's always good. Networking is an important thing, that you can network to other people so that you can have other voices beside yourself be able to say, yeah, we've tried it, tested it, and what to do. And then have a good testing basis for it. Some technology, as much as you can, you want a champion challenge or anything you bring in. So if it's a new skip process or so forth, you want to be able to, even if you're a small shop, be able to do a champion challenger so that you can do a test case just like you're a scientist and have a control group and be able to see what that lift truly is. And so bringing that forth as a case and a model really plays well if you're going to have a good structure for bringing in new technology.
Okay, well, on that note, we've run out of time. So, but before I let everyone go, I want to thank Brian, Matt, and Jeremy one last time for their insights and taking the time to participate as a panelist today. Great job by all of them. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank TCN one last time for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.tcn.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated today and listened in. A final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey for today's webinar, especially if you've got ideas for things you'd like to see covered in upcoming webinars. You know, we're just starting getting planning for 2020. So if there's a topic you'd like to learn more about, then by all means, let me know and I'll do my best to make it happen. So, and I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Everybody enjoy the rest of the day. Panel, excellent job. Thank you so much. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great day.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye.